Welcome to The Sandbox, a Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Participate in the podcast and get your level 7 access by calling 304-837-2278 or go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Dave.
Welcome, everybody, to The Sandbox, a Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, where we'd take on a fleet of LMD daisies any day. My name is Mike.
And I'm Dave, and this is show number 73 of The Sandbox, where we'll be discussing Season 4, Episode 15 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. entitled Self-Control, which aired February 21st, 2017.
And this epic episode was written and directed by Jed Whedon. And this is his directorial debut, and what a debut it was for Jed Whedon. He should do this more often.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that this was the first episode he directed. I guess I just assumed in four seasons somewhere along the way.
Right, and you could tell that it had a lot of interesting camera angles, and of course the fight choreography sequences and things like that were very unique. So I definitely think he should do this again soon. But
right, and you know, I'm a fan of the director letting certain scenes develop and play out a little bit, and he certainly did this on a number of occasions tonight to great effect. As you and I were talking, there's very little to pick at on this episode. I mean, there are a few arguably be conceived as plot holes, but for the most part, there's just a ton to like.
Oh yeah, and what a way to go into hiatus too, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. does this very well. Because, of course, in show news, we have to start off with the return of Brett Dalton, or the impending return of Brett Dalton as Grant Ward. And who could have predicted this would happen? Of course, it's in a virtual world, but still, never thought I would see this day come.
Yeah, and you wonder how this all transpired, whether or not we ever really find out the truth. Probably won't, but who knows. But either way, it's cool.
Especially since, you know, the ship was called Skyward, and you figure a lot of the hardcore Skyward shippers have long since flown the coop, but there might be a few that are just like really loving this. And it made me think, I wonder if they'll call her Sky in the framework, because maybe her life circumstances have prevented her from learning her true name from her original father.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We might really be in for a retro storyline in that sense,
which would be cool.
And then the other thing, Dave, that you pointed out to me, because I had originally thought that I was going to just be announcing we'll be back in April and we'll wait for the date. But you noticed on Twitter that Marvel shared a tweet that said, "It's a whole new world. Agents of Hydra returns April 4th. Wait, there's something off there." I thought that was a clever way not only to maybe introduce the next pod's title, but also give us that return date of April 4th.
Well, any ideas on what the title might be?
If it's not that, I have no idea, but I like it.
I think it's going to be The Framework.
Okay, I like that too. It's weird because there's a lot of plot elements still left over from the LMD, including Ada herself. So we'll see where it goes. But in the meantime, we've got this great second mid-season finale to discuss. So let's go ahead and get into our episode discussion.
All right, now we always start off with our initial impressions or maybe some questions we have, and we're going to certainly start off that way, but we've also got a lot of questions and, you know, things that we think we know, things that we speculate about, and we'll get to those, certainly some during the course of the podcast, some at the end. But for me, first and foremost in this episode is the acting. And it's just, look, the acting is always good in S.H.I.E.L.D. The writing is always good, but tonight they took it to a new level. And for me, I don't mean to neglect Ian DeCastaker's work in this episode because it was stellar, but the dynamic, the interplay between Daisy and Simmons, it just doesn't get any better.
Oh my gosh. I literally cried out when they hugged. I mean, I don't do that very often. So you know that that's a gut reaction when that kind of thing happens, and I couldn't agree more.
Right, and there were some subtle points as well between Daisy and Simmons where they just kind of grasped hands at that one point. It was very subtle, but it was so meaningful. But the other thing that I really liked here is Simmons, and we've talked about her transformation. Mm-hmm. And in this one, how strong, yet still that vulnerability that she has. She falters and then immediately recovers and continues fighting. And there's just something I love about that, as opposed to Daisy, who's pretty much always strong.
Right. And it makes it more realistic, more immersive, if you can believe that the character is doing it the way that you would have them do it in real life. So, yeah, just a real believable performance, real great dialogue, too. And Jed Whedon, of course, has shown that writing skill with a lot of the finales and premieres as well.
Yeah, I think what he's written about maybe 10 to 12 episodes. I saw the list today. He certainly did the pilot. And we could certainly say, well, the most important thing about this episode as we head into the hiatus and wait for the third arc is what? I mean, there's so many things, but certainly one of the things that is just so fascinating is Ada's development. And as I was saying to you earlier today, it's almost as if she wants to be human, that there's something she feels she's missing. Maybe that's her regret that she's not human. And I'm wondering what her new endgame is all about.
Right. Why does she want to be human? If that is something she wants, and she does express to Ivanov that she wants to experience these emotions for herself, but why? What does that get her? How does she plan to make that happen? And what will it get her when she gets it, if she gets it?
Yeah, because at one time, I guess I would have thought that there was some sort of a connection with Radcliffe, but I think that's out of the picture at this point. Yeah. And even she realizes that.
I would think so, yes.
Yeah. But as I said, I really think the name of the third arc is going to be the framework. And I wonder whether the final third of the season is actually going to take place completely in the framework, and that maybe not until the season finale do we come back into real life.
That would be something. I wouldn't be surprised if it's majority in the framework, but given that Ada and Ivanov had their thing at the end of this episode, I do feel like there's got to be something maybe that will threaten the framework for them to do in our real world as well. But maybe it will be more of a minor plot and a majority of everything will take place in the framework, at least for the first half of the third pod.
Okay, but you got a couple nitpicks, I know.
Yeah, well, because we're going to be talking about our questions about the framework, especially from that final scene where we see snippets of everyone's life. But we'll talk about that when we get to it. The main thing I want to bring in is this plan that Gemma and Daisy have come up with. I mean, maybe I just need it to be clarified for me. They're going to go in, they're going to wake the others up, but they also have to find out where the real bodies are. So if they wake them up, how does that help them find out where they are? Because they would have to come back in order to tell them, right? And then also, they mentioned this back door. So if they have to run to wherever Gemma has placed the back door, I assume it's a virtual place that they have to go to, then they go get them? Is that the plan? Am I understanding it correctly?
Well, right. And what makes them think that the virtual characters know where the real bodies are to begin with?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It almost seems like they were talking about waking them up so that they could tell them where they were. But, you know, they would just look around and see an empty room. But I don't know. So the plan, I felt, was a little fuzzy. That was my first nitpick. And then the second thing, especially since it seemed so dangerous, even telling Yo-Yo, you can't wake us up or we'll have brain damage. And it just seems like a training framework would have some kind of way to wake the person up without doing that kind of damage. But I don't know. Maybe that has something to do with the modifications that Radcliffe has made. But then the other thing that you and I were talking about is, what about the people that are in the framework that aren't inhabited by real brains? Because, of course, we know that Ada has created the framework to be an entire world. But what about the inhabitants of that world? So if you have a virtual person like Ward, how accurate is he going to be to the real Grant Ward? And if he is very accurate to that person, how did Ada get that information? That's, I guess, my question. Is that a nitpicky question? Or
Well, I don't think so. But again, correct me if I'm wrong. And look, occasionally we say things like, well, we may have missed something. Well, in this episode, we may have missed a ton, even though we've rewatched it several times in certain key scenes. three, four, maybe even five times, but we don't really see Ward, right? We just see his picture.
Yes, and maybe his shoulder, if that indeed was Brett Dalton, which it might have been a body double. But yeah, maybe they're using the other's memories of him. So if, for example, Coulson interacts with the cello player, then he's constructing the cello player himself from his own brain, perhaps.
Okay.
That's the only explanation I can come up with. But anyway, those are just some precursors to the larger discussion we will have about where everyone is in the framework when we get to the end. But that's a nice little teaser.
All right. Well, the opening scene, just how cool. We see Coulson, May, and Mace, and they're hooked up to the framework. So we get some resolution as to who's in there. Ada's observing, but then she goes into that other room where there's a beaten and bloodied Ivanov lying on a table. And I'd almost forgotten about him, and he's near death. And yet he's still just as combative as he ever is.
Right. And I wasn't sure what she was going to get up to, because she says she didn't bring him there to die. But then you see her take a, what is that? A reciprocating saw to his gut. And you're like, what the hell is going on here?
But she tells him that her prime directive is to protect the framework. And he said this how many times? I don't want to be a thing like you. And she says, don't worry. And then, of course, like you said, she takes it to his midsection. But then, of course, we see later that clearly she's removed his head from his body as well.
I guess she had to do it in pieces, so to speak.
All right. Well, Fitz and Simmons have now decided what they need to do. And before they get too far in their plan, we see the four LMDs enter the lab and tell them that the plan's to bring all the Inhumans to the base. And one of Daisy's first reactions is not so much that there's something fishy about that, but just that from a practical standpoint, it doesn't seem like we should be doing this.
Oh, really? I didn't notice that. Was that on a rewatch that you saw Daisy's reaction? Because
yeah,
I always just was thinking she was going along with the plan for whatever rationalization she had come up with in her own mind, separate from who turned out to actually be the LMDs in that scene.
Yeah, I mean, I forget who says it to her, but that she should be greeting each one of them personally.
I think that's Mac, yeah. But I think they're really preoccupied, even if they did have a plan for finding the sub, by this revelation that they had at the end of the last episode. So they can barely keep it together to pretend like they're doing their actual jobs rather than wondering what to do about these LMDs.
Right, and we wonder whether or not any of the LMDs are going to detect this nervousness. And, of course, at this point, we assume that this really is Fitz and Simmons, but of course, we learn later that it's not. I did notice, and maybe it's from watching too many Android shows, that it felt to me as if LMD Coulson was a bit stilted in his delivery. And
so
then
was
I
Mace.
Thought, so was Mace, but... but, of course, I thought Daisy wasn't, and then, well, yeah, because she's not an LMD.
Yeah, exactly. And Mac's always that way, so.
Right. But I was a little taken aback by Mace's proposition that he and Simmons should retire to his office. It almost had a sexual overtone to it,
yeah.
As if he was almost mocking Fitz or I don't know what. I just didn't get that. That seemed to come out of nowhere.
Well, I think probably in his mind, it seemed like a normal thing to say to get her separated so he could knock her out or do whatever they needed to do to get her turned into an LMD. But it did seem very much like Coulson's delivery and Mace's delivery in terms of getting them separated was very obvious to Fitz and Simmons and, of course, to the audience as well.
And I like the way they lay it out. As Mace and Coulson are walking away, they talk about scanning and replacing the last two. And still at this point, we assume he means Fitz and Simmons.
Right.
Now, the end game, which is to execute the Inhumans once they're on site, is revealed at this point. Yo-Yo's called and informed that they're coming to get her. And I guess certainly coming to get her to scan her as well.
Or get rid of her altogether. And this is the strange thing, because at this point in the episode, we were wondering, okay, these guys are self-aware. They know that they're LMDs, but they are brain scans of the actual people and not acting like themselves. So we already know that these guys are very different from LMD May and also very different from Ada, who was based on Agnes. So it's a definitely, well, I guess Ada almost characterizes it as a rush job. They didn't have time to deal with it a different way.
Now, are you talking about with May?
No, they didn't have time to put Mac and Mace and Coulson and Daisy in, or Fitz, it turns out, into a state that was not self-aware the same way May was, because it almost seemed like Radcliffe expected that. He was kind of surprised that she had made them self-aware.
Right. And it's interesting whether or not that would be perceived as an advantage that May had to discover for herself.
Yeah. It almost ended up working in our team's favor that May was the way she was.
Right. Now, you know, Coulson and May are talking about what's been done to them by Radcliffe. And of course, as you mentioned, the idea of knowing who and what you are. And while she's not happy about it, he starts talking about all the advantages, the no more pain, the deepest regrets wiped away. And what I'm wondering is, how do they know that their regrets have been taken away?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I feel like Ada, who did most of this, probably just allowed them to know that information. And it maybe was something that helped them be a little bit quicker about rounding up all the Inhumans and dispatching them.
So she's just acknowledging that as a part of the rush job and the problems there.
I would think makes sense.
All right. Now, one of the, I guess, primary storylines in this episode, I think, revolves around Coulson. I think everybody that's seen the episode would agree with that. And you can't help but think about James Stewart and It's a Wonderful Life. Coulson wonders what it would have been like had he never joined S.H.I.E.L.D. And I think we know what May's biggest regret would be. I would certainly think it's Bahrain.
Right. And we get the impression that others have regrets too, and we might be able to put our finger on what each one was. But I think there was a very specific reason why they brought out Coulson's like this. Because as we'll talk about later, I think his regret is a big part of why we're ending up with the Agents of Hydra in the third pod.
Yeah. And that is such a cool way to approach it. And on the one hand, you could say, well, could one man have this big an impact on this new world order, which is essentially really what it is?
Yeah. And I think it can center around Coulson very easily.
All right. Well, we see Fitz and Simmons wheeling. I guess they were wheeling a scanner down the hall, right?
Something
like that. Presumably back to the lab, and talking about the possibility that Radcliffe could have replaced anyone. And the LMD detector goes off, indicating that either Fitz or Simmons is an LMD. And then, boom, we cut to commercial, which is one of the things that they just did so well. I mean, they always do. But in this one, it was like, every commercial break was this little mini cliffhanger.
Oh my gosh. And I wasn't sure how to feel about it at first because I thought, oh, here they go. They're going overboard with it. But obviously it did turn out very, very cool the way they did it because, of course, there wasn't an additional LMD. It's just that this one that got detected was one of the original four that showed up on the scan, the original scan. And clearly Fitz did not know that the techs had installed randomly LMD detectors throughout the base.
Right. But what it also does is it sets up a number of scenes throughout the rest of the episode in which certain characters, mainly Gemma Simmons, just really don't know who to trust. And part of the problem for the viewer is that, well, you just may not know that you're an LMD.
Right.
And certainly the confrontation between Fitz and Simmons right away, that's what they're both thinking.
Right. I mean, we know that Coulson and Mac and Mace know what they are, but maybe they don't even know that much and have to keep it hidden, not only from the others that know about them, but maybe even keep it secret from the LMDs themselves until they can figure out a solution. But yeah, it also, of course, builds the mistrust as well. And it's also a difficulty that they encounter when trying to win the trust of the average soldier in S.H.I.E.L.D., including Piper's team that we get a glorious reunion with in this episode.
Oh, I was going to say, how great was it to see her?
Yeah, the Mayettes.
I think we'd almost just given up on the ever seeing her again. So, but this is the scene, the first scene that I was referring to at the top of the podcast, that Jed Whedon really gives it a chance to develop here. And really, it goes for 3 minutes, which on the one hand doesn't seem like a lot, but in TV time, it really is. And there's such an emotional component to it, as Fitz and Simmons turn on each other as their self-preservation modes kick in. And he immediately does what he's been doing a lot lately, which is to blame himself.
Right. He's blaming himself for the technology that Radcliffe exploited. And this is all very believable. Of course, it is a brain scan. I mean, it might be a self-aware LMD, but that doesn't mean it's not Fitz in there just as much as LMD May is exhibiting May's personality traits. So he knows stuff and is able to put on a very believable act, mainly because deep down it's not an act.
Yeah, but and she immediately pulls the gun on him, which I didn't see that coming. The fact that she did it, I really liked. And again, it's almost like this little mini Mexican standoff. They both almost simultaneously recognize the fact that neither truly knows if she or he is an LMD. So it's like, all right, here's the way we're going to do it. And they, in fact, refer to LMD May, not recognizing what she is. But then you see the tears streaming down both of their faces. And on the one hand, I'm thinking like, well, why? But I think it's just the raw emotion and fear on so many levels that just kicks in.
Yeah, it's not just about fearing the other person. It's about fearing themselves and what they might be. And how scary would that be to have that realization?
Yeah, and not to mention that their relationship is now in jeopardy, because they both know, as do we, how hard they've worked to get to this point. And it's just, it's so emotional on that level as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, now you say they actually do come around to a solution. And of course, Simmons does demand that Fitz take the knife and cut his wrist to determine what's under his skin. And I actually thought it was surprising that she chose such a drastic way, because May discovered she was an LMD by accidentally falling on a saw blade for her shoulder. So surely Simmons could have picked a less fatal location to test out to see if there was wires under there.
Well, now, May didn't bleed the way he did. I mean, is this an upgrade of sorts?
Well, I don't think so. I think it's just the location that they chose had more blood, because I do think May had some blood, but the metal was nearer to the surface because it was her shoulder blade. But yeah, it did seem rather bloody. And I thought it was interesting, in not necessarily a good way, that the wrists were used as this test and as a way to dispatch Radcliffe when Ada went through her dilemma later. It's kind of a double use of the same very dangerous method. And so I thought that was a strange juxtaposition. But of course, we think that Simmons has done something very horrible here in asking him to do this, and he has done it. And the whole way through, I was trusting Fitz.
Well, I got to admit, I wasn't even watching at that point. I had my head buried in my hands, and every I'd look up. I mean, it was just gruesome. And for S.H.I.E.L.D., I mean, it bordered on a horror tale.
Yeah.
And it was just frightening in so many places. And, you know, he hesitates. He finally does it, as you alluded to. Apparently hits an artery. Of course, we know it wasn't a true human artery. And then she comes closer, presumably to help him. And then he straightens up and stabs her, knocking her to the ground. And it's like, look, I'm not a huge fan of, I guess, what do you call them?
Jump scares.
Yeah. Jump scares. But here, again, it was done so delicately. It was perfect.
Well, especially since Fitz was so matter of fact all of a sudden, like the tears just went off and he just became completely mechanical at that point. And that was really shocking to see such a contrast. And I don't know that there's anybody who could honestly say they saw that coming. I wouldn't believe you if you said that.
No, I agree. And she's asking him that, you know, why are you doing this? You have Fitz's mind. And as he's preparing to scan her, and then that line, he says, once I map your brain, we never have to fear losing each other again. Now, I get that that's the programming.
Yeah. It's using some real feelings that he has, fears that he has of losing her, because he's lost her a number of times now.
Right. Now, I've watched this scene at least three times. She's crawling across the floor, clearly in search of a weapon. He just lets her go.
Yeah, it's almost as though he has no fear that she won't see it his way. But of course, that's not the case.
Right. I mean, he brings up getting married, growing old together. He sees her. She's got that huge mallet. And maybe he assumes, as you just said, that, well, she can't hurt me.
She can't do it.
Right. Or even if she hits me with it, I'm an android. I mean, it's not going to hurt. Yet she doesn't hit him. She hits whatever it is that was holding up, whatever that was that fell on him. And I guess temporarily trapped him. It looked like it pinned his leg to the ground that enables her to just brutally stab him over and over. And again, so hard to watch.
Very brutal for a show like this. I guess that's why they moved to 10 o'clock.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the most violent scene we've ever witnessed on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And even though we know it's not really Fitz, it didn't make it any easier.
No. And the weirdest thing for me was watching him act like he was feeling pain in order to horrify her to get her to stop, and then alternatingly turn all emotion off to try and fight her away, and then go back to shouting out again. It was like the programming in him was trying to figure out which reaction he should have. It's good acting on Ian's part, I guess.
Yeah, but then what's so great about the editing to provide some comic relief, if you will, and it's certainly not comical, we go back to Daisy and Mac. Daisy goes to check on the accommodations for the incoming Inhumans, and when Mac learns that, he's pretty disturbed. Well, now we know why, because she finds a room full of Daisy LMDs. I mean, she's got her own personal clone army.
Yeah. And I don't remember if it's at this point, whenever it was so perfectly subtle, because we didn't think that it was only four LMDs the whole time. We thought somehow they got Fitz, and we don't know why. They're going to tell us later. But it wasn't until later that we realized, wait a minute, Daisy needs to be taken off the table as an LMD. And of course, this scene where she comes across a bunch of versions of her, it's already become clear. But whenever it was that they introduced it, it was really slipped in there really smoothly. And I really enjoyed that.
All right. Now, I'm not sure how I feel about, I know this is going to sound bizarre, I'm not sure how I feel about her stripping down to the same underwear as the LMDs to buy her time.
Thank goodness she put on the black undies today.
Yeah, I mean, is that kind of a plot jump?
She has a closet full of black everything. But I thought it was cool how Mac thought he had her pinned because one of her straps had been pulled down. All the other ones were perfectly neat, and this one LMD had her strap pulled down. But of course, Daisy had done that exactly for the reason of distracting him so she could get the drop on him.
Right.
Perfect.
And she quakes him, escapes. And then it was, I think, much more horrific for her to watch than for us to watch Coulson do it. But it was still pretty disturbing for us to watch her have to go through it. And that's when she watches Coulson bash in the head of an agent. Now, this is, of course, after I think he shot two, once they realize that LMD Fitz is actually an LMD.
Right.
And then Daisy, obviously at this point, she knows this cannot possibly be Coulson.
Right. It's really great because they actually have to carry out their plan without anyone finding out who is the LMD. But then they use that fact to sow suspicion among the ranks, because immediately they're able to use an infiltration of LMDs to redirect that suspicion at the two people who aren't LMDs among the rank and file.
Yeah. It's like a mini horror movie. And you know, one of these ones we've seen a million times. I can't remember the one that's out on the boat. I don't know if De Niro's in it. Cape Fear, maybe.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, but it just seems to go from one, you know, as soon as they catch their breath, there's another thing they have to deal with. And Daisy sees a trail of blood in the room in which she's hiding and finds Simmons there. And now we're back to the same scenario that we had with Fitz and Simmons a few minutes ago, only Daisy has Mac's shotgun axe this time.
Yep, she took him out temporarily, of course, in the Daisy LMD room. And now she's having to prove herself. They get to that point, I think, much more quickly. Let's prove to each other that we're not LMDs. And I thought it was very clever, the method Daisy came up with, much better than slitting your wrists. And that is, let me quake your bones, just vibrate slightly. I'll be able to tell if they're metal or not. And if I can quake at all, and this is something I brought up last week, Daisy LMD would not have inhuman powers because she would be a machine. And she mentions that exact fact to Simmons as proof. But I mean, it's a perfect way to prove it, but Simmons doesn't want her to touch her, you know, and what, understandably so.
At least in that way. I can't say I blame her, but then that begs the question about the inhuman powers. And, you know, I get that. I understand that. But why a Daisy LMD army?
That's a good question.
If she doesn't have inhuman powers.
Right, because really she's got the fighting skill, but if you're an LMD, I mean, we saw Mace in action. It was like he was the Patriot after all with his super strength, because LMDs are super strong. So, yeah, exactly. Why Daisy and not someone else?
Yeah, why not May?
Maybe she was easier to make, took less materials. Who knows? But it was just great how it was done, because Simmons didn't want her to be touched and she was still suspicious. She wanted her to keep back. But when they did have to come together, there was that great moment of, don't touch me, don't touch me, don't touch me. Oh, let's hug. You know, it was just well done.
Right. And they're both sobbing at this point. And I think we just know instinctively, okay, that's fine. This is going to last about 3 seconds and then they're going to get their act together and they're going to carry on, which is, of course, what they do. So we've got 4 LMDs in place at SHIELD. Obviously, at this point, we know Daisy is not one of them, nor is Gemma. Ada refers to a lack of subtlety in the new arrivals. And here's where I'm a little fuzzy as to what exactly she's talking about. Who are the new arrivals? Is the new LMDs?
Right. Well, no, this is where she was talking about to Radcliffe that they didn't have a lot of time to work in the subtle directives like LMD May had. So the new arrivals are the 4 new LMDs. They aren't very subtle with their mission. They're just going for it. Round up the Inhumans and kill them. And it does seem to bother Radcliffe. That's what's, I think, the most telling about that whole scene, is that Ada had to do it. She has a certain logic to it that makes sense, but Radcliffe was not expecting that. So it makes me wonder, did Radcliffe think that she was going to be able to get them to have some sort of programming that would keep them moving forward, like where May had to get close to Coulson in order to get the Darkhold? Because that would take some real subtlety in getting them to round up all the Inhumans and still make it seem like themselves and make them not aware that they weren't acting like themselves.
Okay. But Daisy is just not going to accept the fact that the rest of the team is dead. She knows that they're still alive. She can just sense it. And because of that, we've got to keep trying. She's going to hack into the framework and she and Simmons are going to immerse themselves, determine the location of the framework. And at this point, Simmons is worried that Daisy is just making a sacrificial play, which she says, no, that's not it. I'm coming out of this, as are you. And then that great line, this is not how your story ends, she tells Simmons. You and Fitz belong together, essentially implying that, and we're going to make that happen.
Right. And this is an interesting scene for me from many different perspectives. One, of course, is that I thought the whole time she was saying, I just want to tell you one thing, and that is that, and I thought it was going to be something meaningful between the two of them, not something that referred to Fitz. But it was that took it to motivate Simmons, because Simmons was feeling very hopeless. And she laid out their plan and made it sound like this is such a far-fetched plan. A lot of things have to go exactly right for it to work. And I think in that sense, Daisy's giving her a pep talk. So for that reason, I am willing to forgive the bringing in of Fitz into the bonding session that's going on here. But it is an interesting way to get Simmons on board with do or die, because what choice do they have?
Yeah, well, desperate times, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And speaking of desperate times, that kind of leads into the first wave where Daisy and Simmons use the little robot vehicles to dispense the gas, which takes out the real agents. Now, is that just to kind of get them temporarily out of the way so they can take on the LMDs?
Oh, yeah. And what a brilliant move, because, of course, they were dealing with overwhelming numbers. So now it's just the two of them versus the four super strong robots.
But when you talk about desperate times, Coulson tells May that, okay, now we need you to enter the fight. You're the last line of defense. And I'm thinking, is this a nod to the cavalry?
Oh, well, that would be a bad move if it was, because that's not a way to motivate LMD May or real May.
Well, we don't know, because we don't know how she's been programmed. Or is it just a pure 100% scan and she's got all of those issues related to the cavalry? You know, maybe you're right, you know.
But when they turned her off, she was already conflicted at that point. So I thought it was kind of ballsy for Coulson to think he could use May to help their cause, because she was already having such doubts as it was.
Yeah, it's not as if she blows the whole place up at the end. So, all right. So Daisy takes on LMD Mace with the shotgun axe, which was classic, while Gemma's giving the agents the gas antidote. And then one of them tells her he doesn't believe that she's real, points a gun at him. I don't care. Get up. I'm like, I love this girl.
But it really, yeah, she has no time to explain. Maybe they could witness. I think she thought she was going to have to do a convincing job. She even says something like, I would tell you, I told you so, but I think Daisy just did my job for me by taking out Mace and Coulson, or Coulson and Mac. Who was it that she took out? Mac and Coulson, sorry.
Right. Now, with Daisy, do we assume that she continues to use her fighting skills, which are quite formidable, to give herself a rest in between quaking?
I think so, yes. Okay. So you're talking about the Mace fight.
Yeah, exactly. And then in what may have been one of the coolest CGI sequences in quite a while, and again, you may tell me, because you have a lot more expertise in this area than I do, that, well, it wasn't all that hard to do. I don't care. It was still cool. She splits her quake. I don't know how else to describe it.
That was awesome. She sort of balled it up in her hands before letting it out, almost as though it had that much more power because she gathered her forces first.
Right. And takes out both Coulson and Mace, literally disintegrating, well, Mace's body anyway. Or is it Mac?
That was Mac.
Yeah. Okay, that was Mac.
Well, because she took out Mace with a knife to the back, shorts him out, probably repairable, because of course Fitz was repairable in this episode, so I feel like Mace is too. But Mac almost seems beyond repair. He just shatters into a million pieces. I think she must have hit just the right resonance frequency, because Coulson just goes through a window.
Right.
But Mac is completely dissolved.
Right. Now, lost in all of this is the fact that Daisy gets shot twice. I think once by Coulson, once by Mac.
Yeah. Were those icers or what was that? Were those bullets?
I don't know. I mean, I think we see her get patched up once she's back on Zephyr, but
that was weird.
It was. And this is not the first time we've seen Daisy getting beaten up. Now, clearly she got her licks in as well, but they're both terribly bruised and beaten. Simmons and Daisy wheel the equipment towards a Zephyr, but they're, of course, stopped by LMD May, and we're thinking, like, oh, crap.
There goes that idea.
Well, and plus May sitting on this huge bomb, and she calls Coulson, but I'm thinking at this point, okay, he's not going to be there because he's still recovering. I mean, like you said, he didn't get disintegrated. He went through the window, but we cut to a commercial. Again, just brilliant on the part of the director.
Well, I especially since I think that they were leading us to believe that everything that May was saying to Daisy and Gemma was fatalistic. She was saying, you know, Coulson says that it won't matter if we die here, and something to the effect of, I won't have to regret this decision later. But when you watch it a second time, you realize she's made her choice to let them through at this point. And everything she's referring to is the fact that she's about to take out Coulson, not that right. she's about to take out them. And I thought that was just really well done, because it could be taken either way, depending on your interpretation.
Right. Now, the one thing we were talking about earlier in the day that I had missed is that Coulson clearly is alive and tells Fitz to program and release the Daisy fleet to seek and destroy. I think it's Metallica, right? I don't know. Seek and destroy. But I kind of missed that. So that's certainly in play. Now, we don't know if he activated. I don't think we saw Fitz carry it out. He was just told to do it.
Well, I think the big question is, how much did that explosion take out that May did in that little tunnel? Did that just take out her and Coulson? Because it would seem very dangerous to not only the LMDs, but perhaps some of the agents in the base. And so I wouldn't think it would be enough to take out Fitz and the Daisy bots. So are we going to see the fleet of Daisies in play in the third part of the season? Because that was kind of a thread left hanging. And we also note that Fitz was repaired, and he was looking down at the shattered Mackens thinking, that's going to take a while to repair. But surely he could repair Mace, and they could get back on the horse and keep coming after him.
Yeah, you would think. But I think what comes out of it more than anything is the autonomous behavior exhibited by May, who lets them through because she wants to.
Yes.
And whether or not the other LMDs will have that at their core, that ability to change and adapt and perhaps do what is perceived to be the right thing, we don't know.
I doubt it.
Yeah. LMD May tells Coulson that her impulse is to keep him safe, but you're not him. And then boom, she pushes the button and blows them both to bits as Zephyr barely gets aloft. And I love the fact that nobody can fly the plane. They find the one guy is like, well, I trained a few hours on it. They're like, good, let's go.
You can do it. If it is nice that they are able to get away with the Zephyr, because it makes me wonder if we are going to be in the framework a lot next season, what's going to happen with the shield base? Because surely there are still people that aren't LMDs that are still in charge. Or will they go back into believing that Director Mace, maybe he can get repaired and Fitz, and they can continue the ruse while Gemma and Daisy are off in the framework?
Right. But part of the problem is we've got Elena.
And Elena, right.
Right. But nobody else to tell her really what's exactly going on. So she's kind of picking stuff up on the fly, and they're on board. You know, they talk about the framework, and Radcliffe has duplicated our world. And, you know, how can they do that? The Darkhold. And then this is where Daisy and Gemma go in. And then I think this is where it really starts to get fuzzy, complicated, awesome, all of the above, because we see Daisy waking up in a bathtub. Her phone vibrates. There's a text message to wake up your boyfriend. There's a mission. And she immediately assumes it's Lincoln. But then we see the picture of her and Ward, and we're like, what?
Well, that's the thing. Who is constructing this? How is it being changed? Because you would think that the original version of the world that Ada created was an exact duplicate of ours. And I guess we kind of glossed over this during the Radcliffe sections, but we are going to get to that small little B story here in a minute. The fact that every reboot that she had to do for each of the different people's regrets really caused the framework to go into an uproar. And I think Radcliffe even notices that, boy, it felt like I was in there a lot longer. Are you sure you woke me up after 24 hours? And it was because of all these reboots she was doing. And so, yeah, the Ward ending up with Daisy is just the first surprise of the bunch.
Right. And since we learned that she has taken one regret out of the equation for each of these individuals is that Daisy's regret that she and Ward.
No, I don't think so. Daisy and Gemma did not have their regrets removed because that was done. Ada only did that for the four.
Ah, good point.
So
right,
whatever happens with Daisy and Ward is as a result of someone else's regret, and it caused a ripple effect.
Okay, which leads naturally into Coulson, who we see as a high school teacher. On the board, he's written, "Inhumans, why we fear them." And then that takes us back to his question at the beginning of the episode. Did you ever think of what it would be like if we didn't join S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Well, in that sense, I think this is the only one that's clear. His regret being removed means he's not part of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I think the whole Agents of Hydra sequence is as a result of that.
We see a little snippet of Mac in a domestic life. He's going out to get the paper. Is this the daughter that we learned about, you know, earlier in the season? Because he picks up the girl's small bicycle.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps that's his regret. Yeah.
Fitz. Now, again, what's fuzzy? Fitz gets out of a fancy car. He has got some expensive threads on.
Yeah.
He gets out, takes the hand of a woman, but we don't see who it is. And then we immediately cut to Simmons' grave marker.
Yeah, what the heck?
Did you notice she was born on September 11th, 1987?
I did not, but I kept looking for a death date, and they very cleverly put some dried up roses over the year that she died. So
yeah, you can see 20, but you can't see the...
Yeah.
And then we see May going up an elevator in this huge, modern-looking building. And then as the camera pans back, we realize it's the Hydra headquarters building, or more accurately, complex.
Yeah, so are they in charge of this world? I mean, we're kind of putting two and two together from those scenes, plus the reaction to those scenes on social media from official Twitter accounts and the like. But yeah, it seems like Hydra's one in this version of events.
Right. They're certainly not hiding in the shadows.
No.
So, all right. Now, you mentioned the B story, and it's really just a couple of scenes, ironically, one of which is the epilogue, but Ada's attempt to protect the framework. And, you know, you mentioned Radcliffe being in the framework for 24 hours and that felt longer. She talks about the changes and what impact those changes have had on the framework itself, but she's building a new body for Ivanov. And it was interesting because we've speculated how they built the bodies, but it was cool to see it.
It was like a 3D printer or something.
Yeah, it was cool for just for a few seconds. But then she brings up the paradox that she's facing because, as she tells Radcliffe, that she's witnessed a lot of illogical human behavior, part of which has created a paradox in her program. And she determines, okay, her prime directive is to protect the framework and to preserve Radcliffe's life above all others. But he presents the biggest threat.
Right, because he's the only one that could theoretically dismantle the framework. And because she has seen that all humans have regrets and flawed emotions that are destructive, then he could at some point change his mind about the framework being a good thing and could take it apart. She's like, I have to protect you, but at the same time, I have to protect the framework and you're threatening it. What do I do? And in the process of describing to him the fact that he exhibits poor self-control and that he might want to give up on the framework, he explains to her that why would I ever want to do this? This is the best thing ever. And even though others don't see it that way, might not see it as a good thing, he believes it wholeheartedly that there's no difference between the life that they're living in the framework, even if their bodies should fail, which we're told is an eventuality if they stay in the framework too long. It doesn't matter because their life in there is no different, in fact, better than their lives in the real life. And that resolves the paradox because now she realizes, okay, well, then I can protect the virtual you instead of the real you.
Right. Slashes his wrists, places him in the framework, and I'm sitting there thinking, like, okay, it's not really Skynet, but what is it? Radcliffe Actual is clearly dead now. I mean, he's had his wrist slashed. I don't think she's going to suddenly go in and provide pressure to stop him from bleeding out. But what her end game is, I guess, is part of the fun, trying to figure out what that actually is, which takes us into the epilogue where we see Ivanov and he wakes up. He looks pretty good. He's pretty much healed. She comes in and shows him that his mind has been untouched, still intact in your head, just like I told you it was. Unfortunately, his head and body are not intact since she separated them.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if she was just doing this to follow the letter of the law, so to speak, or did she need it to be different than the typical LMD here, where he was controlling the mechanical body from his actual mind? Like, was she just being cheeky?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, there are a couple of things that are puzzling here. You know, we talked about her and, you know, the mentioning of the emotions before. I'm wondering, I mean, it almost seems as if she's created the perfect android, but then why the dog tag and why offer him the Darkhold?
Yeah, two very good questions. I think the dog tag is almost very similar to the way she's using Agnes's necklace. Like, she feels like it identifies them somehow as the alpha version of that particular personality, whether it be Ivanov or Ada. So I think that maybe is a good theory for that. But yeah, why mention the Darkhold? We probably would have forgotten about it altogether had she not said, here, something for you to read later on. It's like, well, clearly that's going to come into play.
Right. And it's not as if she needs help, or at least, she needs help protecting the framework, I guess, so she doesn't have to bother with that and can get on to whatever her real work is.
Right. And it's very interesting to say that she needs someone who has the ability to feel the emotions that Radcliffe mentioned, you know, wonder, anger, love, and joy, until she can get those emotions for herself. So she needs Ivanov to be in charge with that ability until she can get her own. Now, that's where the big question comes into play. Why does she need that, given what she's done so far? What is her end game?
Yeah, well, see, I'm going to say, why does she need it? Why does she want it?
So, why does she want it, yeah.
Yeah, so, well, let's, now that we've gone through the whole episode, what do we know for sure? Well, as you pointed out, and I'm certainly on board with this, what we're going to be seeing once we get to the final arc of this season is this shared vision within the framework. And I'm, for one, really looking forward to that.
Right. It's basically like The Matrix. You said this isn't exactly Skynet. I think The Matrix is probably a closer analog to what they're experiencing, where they may or may not believe this is real life. I certainly do think that's the case for the people who have been turned into LMDs. Daisy and Simmons, depending on what Simmons' fate is, are going to be the only ones that know that they're in a virtual reality.
Right. So we know Radcliffe is dead.
Well, Radcliffe, I guess, might know. If Radcliffe is in there, then he might know that it's a fake world as well. Will he be turned to good because of that? I don't know.
Well, even though his body, his real body, is clearly going to be dead.
Right.
We mentioned Ada with Ivanov's protection is going to control the framework. We know Ivanov, actual, is dead.
Well, sort of. His body.
Well, okay. Yeah. LMD May and LMD Coulson get destroyed in the explosion.
But we don't know any more than that. Like, who else got destroyed?
Well, LMD Mac got melted by Quake. I mean...
So you think he's beyond repair?
Come on. Yeah. Now, LMD Fitz, we know, is damaged, but apparently either repaired himself. I don't know who else was there to repair him, so we'll assume he repaired himself. And that's fine, because we know he wasn't that far gone.
Right.
Whether or not he actually activates the Daisy clone army, we don't know. We know he received the order. And then LMD Mace is likely still out there and in action to some degree.
Yeah, because Fitz could repair him. So, yeah, I definitely think that Fitz and Mace and perhaps the Daisy bots are still in play.
Right. Now, what we suspect that Daisy, Mac, Coulson, May, Mace, Fitz are still in the framework. We don't really have any real reason to doubt that.
And Radcliffe and Agnes, I would assume, are in there too.
Right. Now, Simmons, does she die in the framework? Or is that just somebody else's regret, vision? I mean, that's something that I think we have to at least suspect as a possibility.
Well, the biggest problem I have is that Simmons and Daisy specifically said that they had located their avatars in the framework and that they were going in as those avatars. And if Simmons is dead in the framework, does that mean that real Simmons just got put into an avatar that was underground in a coffin? Because that would be damn horrific.
Wow.
That would be fitting with the horror theme of the episode, I guess.
Boy, you're not kidding. And wow, I don't even want to think about that. That's so frightening for me, and I'm not the one in the coffin. You know, we talked about, again, what we suspect. Since Grant Ward's brain was never scanned, any version of him that we see in the framework has to be somewhat limited in scope.
Or an idealized version of him that's in Daisy's mind or someone else's mind.
Right. And he's constructed on thoughts and events that occurred in other people's memories as well. But as you said, primarily Daisy's. Now, what's left up to interpretation? Whose regret possesses the most influence on the framework?
And I think Coulson's must have the most influence.
Okay.
Because him not joining S.H.I.E.L.D. has to be the one thing that has changed this world the most, including the fact that Hydra is in charge. So May's life has changed because of that. Ward has sprung back to life because of that. Daisy's probably going to be back to being called Sky because of that. Probably won't have inhuman powers because of that. And any number of changes. I think the only person who probably wasn't affected by Coulson's regret was maybe Mac, because he's off having his own separate life anyway.
Well, yeah. Now, whose regret causes Simmons' grave marker, death? You mentioned being underground, but whose regret puts her there?
Yeah, we don't know everyone's regret. And the thing is, Simmons at least doesn't have a regret, nor does Daisy, but Fitz has some regret that we don't know what it is. Is that what causes his rise to power, or is someone else's regret causing that as well?
See, I think Fitz is the wild card in all of this.
Yeah.
Daisy fantasizing about being with Ward, you know, that's reasonable. I can see that.
I don't think she's fantasizing about that. That has nothing to do with her. That's just the world has created that circumstance for her.
Okay. And even Coulson, the world creating the circumstance where he's now a high school teacher. Okay.
Yeah.
But I just find it so fascinating that Fitz, is he going to turn out to be a bad guy?
That would be cool. That would be cool. Because I think there's a lot of possibilities for people being turned to help them. Not only Radcliffe, who is now only virtual, he could be turned, but maybe even Ivanov might end up realizing the error of his ways and start working for good. So I think there's a lot of possibilities for people we suspect being good end up being bad and vice versa.
Right. And then speaking of who was once bad, maybe he's now good, whatever the deal with Hydra, clearly out in the open, legitimate to a certain extent. They've got pretty cool digs that they didn't have in the past. So whether this is a result of the fact that Coulson never joined S.H.I.E.L.D.
And what would cause May to join them, you know?
Right.
What the heck is May doing there?
But, wow. Fortunately, I know a lot of people are really disappointed. On the one hand, I like the fact that we have 5 weeks to continue to digest what it is we've just seen.
Oh, yeah. I think it's really well structured. I like having the three different storylines, mainly from what you said last week, which was it feels like we have three seasons in the space of a year.
Yeah.
Because it's like some of the shows. I mean, heck, we watch Humans on AMC. That's 8 episodes.
Right.
That's the same length as one of these Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. arcs.
Yeah.
But we are missing, of course, one main ingredient in this podcast. We've obviously gone longer than we usually do with our episode discussion, and who can blame us with an episode like this? But it's also because we're missing the Coulson report from Faith, because there were no sassy lines. They spent so much time on the emotional intensity that there was no time for quips. And I Faith did tell me that she did scrounge a couple, but they weren't very good. So I persuaded her to just take the week off, and she sent some feedback in instead. So let's get to our feedback, because we got a lot of good thoughts and people speculating on this and that. So we'll start off with Skimmins, who has a lot to say about the good and the bad of this episode. She says, I have to say, Elizabeth's delivery of "that was fast" regarding a rapidly entering mace, thus blowing her cover line, was hilarious. And Skimmins, I'm guessing that might have been one of the lines that Faith had for her short Cole Sass report that she didn't end up doing. So yeah, that was a great line. A great sequence between Gemma and Fitz in the workshop. So many good aspects, from the great debate about who's the LMD and how to solve the debate, to Ian's accent thanks to extremely emotional Fitz, and Gemma fighting to get free. This may be one of the best scenes ever on the series, in my opinion. Nothing will top Ming-Na as May in Bahrain scenes, but it was up there with it. I wonder if Daisy's powers are what saved her from being switched so soon. Maybe Ada couldn't create tech fast enough to mimic her powers, thus making her seem realistic, so Daisy got moved to the bottom of the list. I wonder why she waited so long to replace Gemma, though. And speaking of Daisy and Gemma, Skimmins in the locker. 95% of that sequence was so awesome, as well with the hug and Gemma saying she can't lose Daisy too. But they did taint the end of that sequence to me, as they took what at the very least could have been a great Gemma-Daisy friendship moment, or just a team moment, and used it to try and push the Fitzsimmons romance. They could have had Daisy saying the one thing she knew for certain was she can trust Gemma to always have her back, not let her down, or saying that they're at their best working together. But making it about the Fitzsimmons romance in that moment felt out of place to me. Now, I guess you heard us mention that earlier on, Skimmins. I do think that it's kind of unfair to characterize it as pushing the Fitzsimmons romance. I think she was using that aspect of Simmons's life in order to motivate her to get with the game plan. So right. I do think she needed to do that.
No, I agree. Exactly. Motivational tool in the same way that a coach would motivate her players.
Right. So I don't think they're trying to push the romance. I think they're just using that connection in this case. I knew Ada might turn on Radcliffe, but I was still a little surprised to see how it actually happened. A good Daisy Mace fight scene. Really? Not even winded? That was probably the other Cole's S report line, I'm guessing. I'm with Daisy on this one, as at the very least, he should have had skin peeling from some of the things she hit him with. Aw, LMD May saving the day again. Ming-Na steals that scene. I'm not ashamed to say I cried during her talk to LMD Phil. I love that we got to see inside the frameworks for most of the characters, but I do have some nitpicks, as you'd probably suspect, and the first being, while it'd be fun to see Brett as another character on the show, I don't buy that Daisy's regret out of everything that's happened to her. At the very least, they could have had her boyfriend be Mace, since he's the only framework we didn't get a shot of, so I'd pull him into things. And again, I don't think Daisy's regret is part of the formula here, because they weren't put in the same way the LMDs were. I'm not sure if I buy Coulson would be an anti-inhuman as well. He might be a civilian debating the topic, but fear them, I'm not sure. And that's how I took it, Dave, that he was just bringing it up as a topic of discussion, not actually hating them themselves. I don't know.
No, I agree.
Max Vision was fitting. It was great seeing the movie HQ back, but with the Hydra logo, it does make me wonder, given they know fighting makes May happy, is she a spy looking to bring back S.H.I.E.L.D. like in the movies, or has she turned and why? I wonder if Ada will be the woman in the limo with Fitz, if she has the same seeming attachment the other Ada did, and if so, why did she pick him? That's a good theory. Finally, why is Gemma dead? Ada has seemingly gone through a lot of trouble to keep Gemma Simmons, of all people, out of the framework. Why? And again, I don't think that was a conscious choice. I think other people's regrets caused Gemma to be dead for some reason, but we'll have to find out. Is it because she wants Fitz? And if so, why not just program herself with him? He seemed happy in his vision. And give Gemma a vision such as still heading S.H.I.E.L.D.'s science division, even if they're the rebels, because Hydra is them in the framework, or show her working with the Avengers, if any exists still, or just being a doctor somewhere. Also, how is Gemma going to get out to help Daisy? The way Gemma talked, they both had living decoys, but if she's the one in the limo, why not show her getting out with Fitz, given all the Fitzsimmons romance comments? Did Framework Gemma fake her death for some reason? If so, oh, that would be cool. If so, where is she? Fitzsimmons romance and Vision nitpicks aside, this was easily one of the best episodes of the series ever. I look forward to your thoughts. A lot to cover and ponder until the next part. Depending on how things go in the third act, season 4 might be the best season of the show. Season 2 still had some great stuff, don't get me wrong, but season 4 has been pretty good also. I look forward to your thoughts on the season as a whole when part 3 finishes. Enjoying the thoughts as always. Well, thank you, Simmons. That's a lot to digest, and we'll definitely mull that over as the hiatus continues.
Well, Taltos checked in with us as usual and says that Simmons said that they had located the duplicates of herself and Daisy in the framework. However, we later saw her gravestone. Did she fake her death? Here we go again, which neither of us thought about that as a possibility.
Yeah, no.
Or is there an LMD of Simmons in the framework? Could Fitz have turned to the LMD program to replace a lost love? Or is that Ada in the car with him?
Yeah, again, same thought as Skimmins there.
I wonder if his storyline will tie into the reference made about his father in episode 412.
Yeah, because that, why mention the father unless that's going to be part of his regret? Because otherwise that was just hanging out there, right?
Yep. Well, I could see how Coulson's lack of involvement with S.H.I.E.L.D. could result in Hydra taking over. What about May? From what we know of May, I can't see her working for Hydra voluntarily unless she's there undercover. Do you think she is the one that texted Daisy? As Daisy, Sky, is with Ward and he was a Hydra agent, it seems possible they could all be working together. And the wording on that text was very May-ish. I'm a bit confused as to how Daisy would even end up at S.H.I.E.L.D. or Hydra in the framework. Coulson was the one to recruit and support her becoming an agent, and if he never joined S.H.I.E.L.D., how did Daisy end up there? Good question.
Yeah.
She shouldn't have the fix one regret change to her backstory, as she has not officially been added to the framework, and you pointed that out as well.
Right. That's a great question. How would Daisy end up as an agent or even knowing Ward? Wouldn't she still be a hacker in this sequence of events? Yeah, this is going to be very interesting to see how they got to where they were. This is all very reminiscent of the end of season 3 when we were wondering, who's the director that Coulson is referring to and why isn't it him? It's all very speculative at this point. All right, we heard from Peter who says, that episode was insane. Kudos to Jed Whedon for this amazing directorial debut. This episode is definitely in the top 10 of the entire series. I was engaged the entire time. Gemma's encounter with LMD Fitz was heartbreaking. She had been against LMDs from the start, so when she had to kill one that looked and acted like Fitz, I'm sure she was rocked to her core. She might have some PTSD after all of this is over. Having to kill the love of your life, even if he's an LMD, is no small feat. When Daisy found the room full of LMDs of her, my jaw dropped. I had no idea just how quickly the LMDs can be created. That's a good point. How did they make those so fast? I'm glad that she was able to escape and rejoin Simmons. I'm sure Skimmins is smiling ear to ear when Daisy and Simmons embraced. That was a beautiful moment. Daisy's fight with the LMDs has to be the most intense we've seen in quite a long time. Her display of fighting prowess and power was remarkable. She's definitely a force to be reckoned with. I loved the moment when she destroyed LMD Mac with her Quake Blast. That was such cool special effects. I also am happy to see some payoff for the Mayettes. I've been waiting for when they'd show up again. I'm glad they are back and getting some of the spotlight, being the backup team for our agents. And yeah, presumably Piper and her team are still on the Zephyr along with Yo-Yo, so maybe there'll be a little bit of that action as well in the final arc. LMD May's final act was emotional and heartbreaking. When Daisy and Simmons saw her, I thought LMD May would kill them. I'm glad that she had enough free will to do the right thing and save her friends. Her final moments with Coulson nearly brought tears to my eyes. Even though she's an LMD, her emotions were not predetermined. I hope that we'll get the chance to see the real May and Coulson get together at some point. Lastly, I'm terrified of Ada. I was already scared of her before because of how much she's changing, but now she's definitely frightening. I think she's actually scarier than Ultron because she's rationalizing her logistics and desires to acquire emotions. She was ruthless with dismembering the superior, who's nothing more than a lackey now. She felt nothing when she killed Radcliffe either. His death was shocking, to say the least. I think it's safe to say that the true big bad is Ada. Now we have to wait until April. It's too far away. It'll be here before you know it, Peter.
Right. JT of BCS writes into us, "Darn it, darn it, darn it, darn it. Come on, guys, wimping out on us with a HAL 9000 cop-out from 2001 A Space Odyssey. Really? You did it so well with May and sputtered to a halt with Ada's entire motivation. And the silly brain guy in a box? What is he, Brainiac? Seriously, is that a joke? I am so disappointed. The follow-up story looks so-so, like maybe Ada has decided to motivate them by making their little worlds slightly imperfect. The Lincoln bait was so, shall we say, predictable. Of course Daisy has to go through the bad boyfriend all over again. Ada will probably show up like a fairy godmother offering her Lincoln if only she will teach her all about love. Mush, mush, mush. Each of them will be offered their heart's desire if only they will help out little Ada ask the wizard for a heart. I guess the graveyard was the rendezvous site to wake them all up from their respective dreams turn nightmares. I sure hope it doesn't play out like that. It would be a lot more fun if Jarvis lent a hand."
I love that. I don't necessarily agree with JT's dissatisfaction, but he brings up a good point. Maybe Ada will show up and promise little tweaks in order to get what she wants, because she could use the framework to reach her goals of getting emotions somehow. That would be interesting.
Well, right. I mean, we talked about Radcliffe wanting immortality. Maybe she just wants to be human, I think.
A real boy.
Yes.
All right. And lastly, we heard from Faith, who says, "I think I can easily say this was the best episode to date. Jed Whedon needs to write and direct more episodes. Before I dive into the wonderful moments, I must mention my one issue. I understand that Daisy didn't have her gauntlets and could get hurt, but she has the ability to quake people and LMDs at their core. She could have easily just vibrated LMD Mace at the right frequency. I guess we wouldn't have gotten an epic fight scene, though." Yeah, that was amazing. "Top three best sequences. One, Fitzsimmons in the workshop. I've said this before and I need to say it again. ABC needs to push for an Emmy nod for Ian DeCastaker. He is consistently amazing. And Elizabeth Henstridge blew me away. Watching Simmons repeatedly stab Fitz, if that didn't hit you hard, you have no soul. Two, Simmons and Daisy meeting up. That scene, the fear, anger, and uncertainty they both felt, was a microcosm of this entire episode. They were both so elated and relieved when Daisy quaked Simmons, my eyes may have gotten a little misty. Three, the absolute perfection that was the standoff between May and Coulson. The best visual moment on screen, Coulson pointing the gun, and then boom. I'm hoping that we will see a confrontation like this, well, hopefully without guns and explosives, between the real Coulson and May. They need to have that kind of talk with all the raw emotion just laid out on the table." Then she did bring up those three best sequences that had the most emotional impact. I could not agree more. Those all three were just Emmy-worthy performances by all involved. Now, Faith's questions were, one, was LMD Mac terribly confused? He is a robot, yet Mac hates robots. That must have been very difficult to reconcile. Good point. Number two, what regret in Fitz's life led to what we saw in the framework? Again, that's the wild card that Dave mentioned. And of course, it doesn't necessarily have to be his regret that led to that, but probably it is. And three, is Coulson with Amy Acker's character? That would be fun. And why isn't he in S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore? Or is he? Four, is Framework Gemma actually dead? And my biggest question, how am I going to make it through this hiatus spoiler-free? Yep, that's going to be a struggle. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of teasers out there and hints, especially about what Brett Dalton's going to be up to. But you can do it, Faith. I have faith, as it were.
Right. And help us out, ABC. Keep it to yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. Don't give stuff away. Can't wait. It's going to be a fun time once April gets here. Take March off. Get a breather. see if you can absorb all that you've seen, like Dave said, and we'll be back here to take the mantle back up when we get back to Agents of Hydra, whatever they're going to call it. Well, that's going to be it for this edition of The Sandbox. Keep up with show news and fan interaction by following us on Twitter at @Shield_GSM. And our popular Facebook group is at facebook.com/groups/AgentsOfShieldGSM. We'll still be talking about stuff, maybe Iron Fist, among other things, to talk about during the hiatus.
And Mike and I will be back in April with our discussion of the third pod of Season 4, perhaps entitled Agents of Hydra. But remember, after the episode airs, head on over to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback to share your thoughts, write us a message, record a comment using your computer's microphone, or call 304-837-2278.
And just a quick reminder that we will be talking about Legion, the FX show that follows an X-Men arc on Sci-Fi Fidelity over on Den of Geek, so please check that out if you can. But in the meantime, we hope you've been enjoying our coverage of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Remember, Hail Hydra!